Let's hope.
Welcome to MacGuffin Men. I'm Alex. The guy having a laughing fit next to me is James.
Hello.
Before we get started on our podcast this week, thank you for pointing out that I'm running out of disk space, James. Just want to get you to check out our website, themacguffinmen.com. We've got a lot of content up. Last week we put out three podcasts, the first one being on The Master, and then we did two podcasts on the previous movies of Rian Johnson, being Brick and The Brothers Bloom. And for the last 10 minutes or so of The Brothers Bloom podcast, we talked about Rian Johnson as an auteur, and that discussion will kind of continue today. But before we get to that, we just, you know, again want to implore you to check out our website, and also follow us on Twitter at The MacGuffin Men. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/TheMacGuffinMen, and click the like button. And is there anything else? Oh, email us, themacguffinmen@gmail.com. Tell your friends about us. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Search The MacGuffin Men, all one word. Yeah, I think that's pretty much everything. We don't have a Pinterest, and I've run out of jokes to make about Pinterest because we've done that many times. But yeah, let's just hit the theme song.
Welcome to The MacGuffin Men. This episode is brought to you by Looper, where in the future, everybody looks like a Thunderbird's marionette. And now, here are Alex and James.
Welcome back from the theme song. James is still here, still having a laughing fit. What movie are we talking about here today, James?
Looper.
Yes.
Looper.
Yes.
The latest Rian Johnson. The greatest Rian Johnson?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say we'll get to it later, but...
Oh, okay. Sure.
Yeah, his newest sci-fi action...
Yep.
...adventure.
Yes.
Fantasy.
Western.
Western? Yeah. All right, let's hear that. Justify that.
It's rural. It has elements of a Western. All the way Rian Johnson shoots all of his movies remind me kind of a spaghetti Western, particularly Brick and this one.
Okay. Yeah. Did you like this movie overall? Your hopes were so high.
It's weird. I like every aspect of this movie, but I didn't love the movie. I don't know, like, every element of this movie that I think about and, like, taking everything apart, like, I've been spending a lot of time thinking about it, every time I think about something in the movie, it only becomes better, but I still didn't love watching the movie, and I can't explain why. Part of me feels like a big part of that might be that I didn't care about the kid, but,
yeah,
I mean... I don't know.
I don't think you're supposed to care about the kid too much.
Well, one of the big things I liked about the movie was that in the climax, I didn't know who I was supposed to care for and didn't really, was kind of ambivalent towards everybody, which is very rare in a movie.
Yeah.
And I liked that a lot. But no, I think every aspect of this movie was really well executed. And I like the writing of the movie. I like the performances in the movie. I like the visual style of the movie. I like the music. There's just something about watching the movie that I don't know. There was just something missing, and I cannot cogently express what.
Okay.
Yeah. And you?
I liked it. Sounds like I liked it more than you did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I enjoy a lot of those elements. And yeah, the idea that near the end you don't really know who you're supposed to be rooting for or what outcome you even want.
Yeah.
I think is good. Yeah, I think they deal with some of the morality of some of what the loopers have to do in an interesting way near the end. But for me, it just... And maybe this is why you didn't love this movie and can't figure out why. I think the second half is just not very good. Or the third half. Or the third act really drops the ball.
See, I think the third act was my favorite.
Really?
Oh, yeah. That was where I was the most invested.
You usually are most invested by the third act, though.
I don't know that that's true.
I think they set up two acts of the third
one. Well, no, I thought you meant me specifically.
Oh, no. I just mean the narrative structure.
Yeah, no, I thought that was, I don't know, the only times where I felt like really, really, really invested in the movie were those parts.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I guess there was a lot on the line in those parts. But I just think that a lot of the stuff with Sid and the Rainmaker and the kid and his mom on the farm were the things that I enjoyed least about this movie.
Okay.
And so that's why I think they set up a very interesting world. I think they do tons of stuff right about how they show the future and kind of some of the time travel stuff they start dealing with, and then it really just loses steam near the end for me, at least.
Okay, seeing that, that was the part I liked. I thought that, like, the last 5 minutes were the best 5 minutes of the movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
How did you like their depiction of the future? I think that's always something that's very important in futuristic movies. And even when it's a kind of a cheap, hokey-looking sci-fi movie, I'm always very interested to see how people do the future, mm-hmm. especially visually. I think that's, you know, an interesting thing to do. I mean, this is the United States only about 30 years from today. So yeah. It's not going to be crazy. Not everything's going to be different. But, yeah, I knew this was... Just from that timeline, things were going to be pretty similar, but obviously 30 years ahead and the way things change very quickly now is going to be different.
Yeah. No, I thought it was fine. It all made sense as far as what the future looked like. And I think there was a defined Rian Johnson said that there was a defined idea to not make the world too crazy, like something we just didn't totally recognize.
Yeah.
Because it's such a dense movie that they just didn't want us to spend too much time focusing on the world. And it's just, you know, it's another one of those futuristic movies that just really riffs on Blade Runner a lot, you know?
Yeah, I can see that.
And I don't say that negatively. I just sort of mean, like, pretty much all modern sci-fis that deal with a dystopic sort of future really lean on Blade Runner quite a bit.
It's not that dystopic of a future, though. Is it?
Yeah, I think it is.
Why?
Well, we never really see a nice part of town in the city.
That's true.
Hmm. Things look pretty bleak. It's yeah. All drug addiction and murders.
Yeah, and I guess when she's talking about the past and all the vagrant
yeah.
uprising and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It. I don't know. I guess, yeah, and I guess just for me, we don't meet that many other people outside of this narrative. Like we...
No, exactly.
We have very few characters, and they're involved in a... I mean, they're hitmen, so they're involved in a pretty grimy business in the criminal underworld. So, yeah, we don't really... It's not like a kind of an Orwellian dystopian future where we see all these people being subjugated. But yeah. You are right that there aren't very nice places. The only nice place is kind of the farm. And she mentions how life hasn't always been good there and how there's always vagrants, you know, attacking the house and things like that. So.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think, I mean, we only... The only people outside of the world of Loopers or Sarah and Sid that we see are kind of just homeless people, you know, and when we see the homeless people, they're either causing a ruckus, getting shot in the back or pissing off Paul Dano, you know?
Yes, who I did not enjoy in this movie.
That's fine. I don't always love Paul Dano.
I don't really like him. Yeah. One thing I liked was the cars.
Yeah.
I mean, they're futuristic. They seem to have some kind of cycle for their exhaust. Like it looked as though they figured out some environmental way to make things work, but you still saw a lot of just run down piece of shit cars. Like they have this futuristic technology, but you still have poor people and working class people, so you have these beat up vehicles even with this, you know, revolutionary technology attached to it.
Yep. You know, Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character's name is Joe. Yes. His full name is Joseph Simmons. Does that make you chuckle at all?
No, should it?
It's Reverend Run's name. So I got a pretty big kick out of that. So the Run in Run DMC is also named Joseph Simmons. So I found that humorous.
Okay, yeah, that's funny to me.
I just had to mention that at some point.
Yes, that does not surprise me that you'd bring that up. Yeah. How'd you like the action?
I liked it. I didn't. There was nothing I loved as far as I actually know. When
I think I can guess it.
What?
When Bruce Willis shoots that guy, then puts his guns under the guy's shoulder to use him as a human shield.
No,
and shoot.
No,
that part I liked a lot.
Really? I did not care for that.
Really?
I don't know.
It's not like it's crazy original, but I thought it looked good and worked in that scene.
Okay, fair. The thing I liked was when Kid Blue comes to Joe's apartment and Joe is sort of like hiding out and then knocks Kid Blue into his safe, like his floor safe.
Yeah.
And then the camera like dollies over the floor safe as he's knocking him in, and then dollies back as Joe closes the door on him. I love that. Yeah. That was like textbook Rian Johnson.
Yeah, that was good.
And that sequence in general I really liked. I liked when Joe fell out of the window as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we get some shots of the feet and some other Rian Johnson-y stuff.
Yeah, exactly. No, I thought I thought the best action sequences were the montage sequences. Like when we were getting the sequence where Joseph Gordon-Levitt's just, or Joe is just killing people over and over.
Yeah.
And we're just sort of going through the cycle, like his life, just this and this and this. I love that. And like just sort of the way he's walking through the club. And I think when he walks back to into his apartment, there's just this one like dolly track that's like a really close up of Joseph Gordon-Levitt's face. And he's just sort of walking through all these people and they're, you know, people in between the camera and him. And he just walks from there right into his apartment. And that was really cool. And I don't know, like I liked the montages a lot, but I mean, that's not surprising.
Yeah. Well, and that's another thing I liked, I guess, about how they do make the future look. I mean, it is just a little bit different, like doing the drugs, the eye drops and things like that. Yeah. And the way that the clubs look, like it's just a little bit different than what we're used to, but still very recognizable as like a trendy club. And he's using drugs and you see this addiction cycle going for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. And yeah, those montages were very good.
Yeah.
What did you think of the telekinesis stuff?
I didn't have a problem with it.
Okay, because yeah. I mean, initially when you kind of just hear about it and you see Seth, Paul Dano's character.
Yep, that sounds right.
Using it, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt talks about how some people have telekinesis, and it's just something lame that people do to try to pick up chicks now. I thought that was hilarious. Okay. I thought that was such a good little future thing. Like, you know, all these wonderful, crazy changes that people predict about the future, they get really normalized and humanized. It's like, yeah, okay, some people can do that.
Yeah.
And it's just a lame, annoying party trick now. Yeah. Like, it seemed very kind of lived in and personal. And I really like that about it. And then, of course, it comes up later with Sid and how the narrative function, but I think even if just on its own, I really would have liked that little bit being added in there.
Okay, fair.
Yeah, let's talk about the whole Rainmaker Sid storyline.
Okay.
Did that feel connected to this movie entirely?
Yeah.
Yeah? I just feel like the beginning, as I said before, like sets up this interesting world where they could have done a lot of different stories with the setup they have of, you know, being a looper and having time travel in this way and being a hitman like that. And I just don't like where it goes in the other one. It seems like this like X-Men origin story just stapled on to an action movie that could have gone in a different direction and I think a more enjoyable direction.
Well, I think what its purpose is to set up that kid's future. Like the idea is that the struggle in this movie is like a struggle for what the future will hold for Sid.
Yeah.
And that's very clear at the end of the movie. And I think they just needed to, he needed to be set up as something that could, even though we never see it, we know that this kid as an adult would be the single dominant human being.
Yeah.
We needed to know that. And that's sort of what that is. And I think that's what makes it so important in old Joe's mind, played by Bruce Willis, that kid has to die.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and it also sort of makes young Joe's motives for trying to stop that being a little bit muddier. Like, we have to think, well, maybe it wouldn't be so bad if this kid died, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's the whole crux of the movie. And I like the crux of the movie. That was one of the things I liked.
Yeah. Well, I understand it's narrative importance. I just think that that doesn't have to be where the story goes with this looper setup.
Okay, fair.
You know, it's, I mean, you could take it a million different directions. I just wasn't crazy about this one. There were some things that I did like about the whole kid's story. I mean, I loved when Bruce Willis's, or old Joe is, I guess everyone's calling him. Not just you. I've heard other people in discussion.
Well, I mean, we have to. Both named Joe.
Yeah,
so
there's nothing you can really. They are the same person. It's hard to distinguish it. I liked the whole him struggling with the morality of going back and killing children and killing people, even if they weren't children, killing people before they had done anything horrible.
Exactly, and that's why we have to see old Joe cry after he kills the first kid. Like, we need to see that he has remorse and that, you know, he doesn't want to do this, but he feels it's for the greater good.
Yeah, and that's just one thing that I did like. I mean, even though logically he's figured out that, okay, this kid is going to become the Rainmaker. The Rainmaker is going to do all these horrible things. He still struggles with it morally, and he's still, I think, not 100% sure that that's going to be the case.
What do you mean?
Well, I just think that the way it doesn't seem like he fully understands everything about time travel,
mm-hmm.
like, and just as a feature of a movie, there's always weird paradoxes in time travel.
In
any movie that tries to explain it, there's always a little bit more. And anytime a movie comes out, people are like, oh, plot holes, this and this. And I do like how they address that in this movie, in the diner scene.
Yeah,
he said he will be here forever, I'll be making diagrams with straws and things like that. It just kind of seemed like Rian Johnson being like, hey, just for every action movie, if for every time travel movie, we know that there are a bunch of paradoxes and we can't fully get into it right now.
Well,
let's suspend disbelief.
Exactly. No, and I mean, the whole third act just it doesn't make sense. Old Joe would have experienced that already as young Joe. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's just no way that it makes sense to me.
But
I'm fine with it. I've always been upfront about being like, if you can do something totally crazily illogical and make your end point with that interesting,
yeah,
fine with it.
But I thought he said that the memories don't come to him until young Joe does them again.
Yeah,
which is something I really, that was a one thing that kind of does address some of the paradox issues pretty well.
That's true.
Because that was something I hadn't heard that I really liked, and kind of puts old Joe in a very interesting spot anyway, that we don't usually see from the time traveler character.
Yeah, and I mean, we've got that scene where Sarah, Emily Blunt's character, slapping young Joe, sort of is almost like hitting the memory out of old Joe's head of when he met his wife.
Yeah, that was a cool shot.
I thought that
there.
Was a really nice scene.
Yeah. I like that diner scene altogether, though, not just for the...
Oh, it was a great scene.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and just watching someone speak to their younger self. Just awesome. Like, you're so stupid and self-absorbed, yeah, and like thinking so short term.
No, I know. Exactly. No, it was great. How'd you feel about JGL's makeup?
It was just weird. Like, when I saw the trailers, I kind of liked the idea of him looking different,
mm-hmm,
than he does. And just because things change and fashions change and trends change, and maybe there was some, you know, medical things in the meantime that people look like this way now.
Yeah.
I just find it didn't make him look that much more like Bruce Willis, which I think was the intended goal from what I read.
You can only do so much, but yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I thought there were parts where, like, I thought it was disorienting for the first minute of the movie.
Yeah.
And then from then on, I was just sort of used to it. And the scene where he's having the sit down with Noah, Jeff Daniels' character? Does that sound right?
Abe.
Don't know where I went with Noah.
Another Bible name.
Anyway, yeah, that scene, there were like, I don't know if it was the lighting or what, or just, I just thought he was just killing Bruce Willis' impression. Like,
oh, yeah?
It was perfect. I just, like, the way he pursed his lips and, like, just his cranial structure was so Bruce Willis in that scene. And I know you're laughing, but like, it just looked perfect in that scene.
Yeah.
And I thought, like, a big thing for the prosthetics that they did was his nose. Bruce Willis's nose was right on Joseph Gordon-Levitt's face. And I thought Joseph Gordon-Levitt really nailed the mannerisms. And I think, I don't know, I thought at times, you know, it looked kind of weird. But I mean, after the first minute, you were used to it. And sometimes it really looked like Bruce Willis, but the times that it didn't hurt the movie at all.
Didn't stand out. Okay.
Yeah.
There was one, I don't know, it's just his eyebrows, which is not something I normally notice on people.
Eyebrows were so thick and dark, you know what I mean?
And I don't know, like rounded at the end. And there was one clip that they played twice in a row. And I mean, there's a couple that they do that with in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But one just close up of his face. I think it's when he's waiting for old Joe to appear.
Okay.
But yeah, that one really distracted me.
Okay. Fair enough. That's it.
I don't know that much more to say.
Okay, well, let's talk about what the movie is about then.
Okay.
All right, I guess a quick little question. You mentioned before I saw this movie that there was a scene in the trailer that you saw it and be like, I know Alex wants to talk about that, even though like I didn't watch the trailer for this movie before I saw it. What was that scene? I was curious.
Yeah, I know. It's such a brief shot, but I just thought it was Rian Johnson-y. Not that it was an amazing shot or anything, but it's when... I think it's during one of the montage scenes when he blows up the building and he's just plugging his ear, standing in front of the fire.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I don't know why, but that just seemed like the kind of the vulnerable male. Like, he's there and he's badass and he's blowing up buildings, but he still, like, has to plug his ears. It still kind of hurts him. Like, he's not invincible in any way.
Okay.
That just kind of seemed like a Rian Johnson-y vulnerable hero thing that I thought you might enjoy.
Okay. No, that's fair.
Did you watch the trailer since?
No.
Okay.
I don't see a purpose to watching the trailer.
No, I just thought because you had heard that it was kind of had some spoilers in it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what more was spoiled.
Here's something that I was like, as I was watching the movie, you know, in the first 20 minutes when we see young Joe and old Joe meet for the first time, like when Bruce Willis makes his first appearance in the movie. And then, you know, he knocks out young Joe and we see young Joe fall out the window and then it cuts to black. And then we see the 30 years.
Yeah.
And then when that just goes dark and we come back to that scene again, I was like, holy shit, is this the time loop movie? Is this like Source Code? Because I think I love that type of thing where you get to relive a certain amount of time so many times. Even though, you know, Source Code really fell apart at the end. But like, I just love that idea, like that Groundhog Day type idea. It's just like always interesting. And then for like 2 minutes, I was like, is this a time loop movie? I really have no idea. And then I was like, oh, I have no idea what this movie is. I love it.
It's called Looper. It really could be a time loop movie.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, the whole movie is about loops, but not what I was thinking. And, you know, it just sort of ended up being we had to see how Bruce Willis got to that point.
Yeah.
But OK, let's talk about the ending of the movie, because the movie's points are all totally summed up in the last 5 minutes. We find out, okay, well, here that kid Blue has been killed by young Joe. Old Joe is currently hunting Sid and Sarah, following or stepping in front of their truck or whatever. And Sid wants whatever. The truck flips. Old Joe is chasing Sid and Sarah through into the cornfield where they're running away to. And then young Joe sort of catches up and sees old Joe, and he's going to kill old Joe because old Joe has just shot Sid in the face. And it's very clear that he is going to kill this kid. And young Joe is sort of just like thinking, well, you can't murder a kid. Like that's a rule you cannot break.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That seems to be his motivation. It's like, he has to have a chance to be bad before we can decide to kill him. Right.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, he's kind of grown attached to this kid. You know, it might be different.
That's true,
it was just any kid, but I it's probably both.
I think he's initially like I think he struggles with the idea of killing a kid entirely, right off the bat.
Yeah. And we see him even after he's done something terrifying. Joseph Gordon-Levitt has the chance to kill him right away.
Yeah, exactly. And the only reason old Joe is like really possessed to kill these kids is because there's something he loves more that he thinks he's saving by killing these kids.
Yeah.
And that's his wife. Yeah, and so that's sort of their motivation. Like, young Joe doesn't have a good enough reason to kill a kid in his mind.
Yeah.
And then young Joe sees all this stuff and sort of there's a quick voiceover where he's like, and then I saw it all or whatever. And he basically realizes that violence is sort of this never-ending cycle. It's sort of like its own loop. And it's not that Sid will definitely become the Rainmaker. It's that Sid's mom being killed by old Joe will turn him into the Rainmaker. It's just sort of seeing this violence and then having nobody in his life to sort of teach him right from wrong, which Sarah is very established very much as. And it's that makes him the Rainmaker more than anything else. And so even young Joe even realizes that maybe even killing old Joe isn't right, because then he's still a part of this world. Young Joe is. And that kid would still be exposed to this violence. Whereas if he just sort of takes himself out of this loop entirely, like he closes the loop on his own and kills himself, which is what he does. It just sort of, it gives that kid a fair shake. And the idea is that violence is a never ending cycle, and we can't stop violence from killing other people. We can only stop violence by entirely taking ourselves out of that cycle. That doesn't necessarily mean we have to kill ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just sort of means...
In his case, it does.
But exactly.
I don't think this is a pro-suicide movie.
No, not at all. No.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
Yeah, and the idea is that we just need to put the gun down and step away. The only reason young Joe has to kill himself is because old Joe is about to kill a child.
Yeah.
Or that child's mother, and that child is going to get away and then kill everybody. And I thought that was interesting, and I liked the way that was done. I was a little... I didn't love the sepia tone, but... on the flash forwards, but I liked the idea. And even though I sort of figured out that was what this movie was about before we got to that scene, I really liked the execution of it.
Yeah.
And you know, I think another part of the reason why I just sort of like it is because like, I just totally agree with that. And this movie is very big on the nurture side of the nature versus nurture argument, which I again, totally agree with.
Yeah.
And just any of the ideas in this movie, I totally agree with, you know?
Okay. Yeah. And I think, that whole scene speaks to the fact that violence is just about who, you know, in this one, it's about who you know first. Like, old Joe has his wife, and Sarah has Sid. And as far as they know, none of them are morally better or worse than the other one. It's mm-hmm. just about who you love, who you're close to, who you're born with, and who you're born near. And I'm not going to get crazy political or anything, but I mean, to look at any of these big conflicts that happen in the world, it's just some sides don't even know what they're really fighting for, but they just know that the people closer to them are being taken away, and therefore their side must be right, because, you know, and as you said, you just have to take the violence out of that. It's mm-hmm. not about putting more violence in one direction or the other. You just have to reduce that. Now, yes, this does it in a weird way by someone shooting themselves in the heart with a shotgun, but, you know, yeah, it's about closing that loop, that cycle, and finding a different solution.
Exactly. And I think a big part of that, that's a big thing that's interesting, is that, you know, Joe is closing his loop, but he's closing it himself. Whereas the mafia, is continually closing loops by, you know, by the terminology of the movie, killing these loopers
yeah.
or getting these loopers to kill themselves, which eventually closes their loop. But the idea is that they're doing it in sort of this systemic way. Like, it's sort of this, I don't know, it's sort of orders, like, close this loop, as opposed to just sort of stepping away. You know what I mean? That it's sort of, that it's such an, on like a big scale that this, that these actions are being handed out from, that it's sort of, the problem is sort of more systemic than yeah. anything. And I thought that was interesting, in that just the way that, you know, it, both ways you are closing a loop, but there's just different ways to do it.
Yeah.
And you know, the movie is very clearly on the side of young Joe at the yes. end. But no, I like that a lot. And yeah, the mafia perpetuates the violence. Like, they're a group and they're closing loops and perpetuating the violence, but the individuals and the Joe as well, and Sarah is sort of helping close a loop as well, just by being the only nonviolent character in this movie.
Yeah, she has chances.
Exactly, tons of chances, yeah. and threatens people with violence, but never actually acts on it.
Yeah,
the worst thing she does in the movie is shoot young Joe in the chest with rock salt.
Yeah,
and that's, even then, like, that's debatable, you know? And I mean, it doesn't cause any long-term harm to him. It's just sort of,
yeah, and what,
back off, get your own sandwich.
Yeah, and she's very confused as to what the situation is, but it seems
that she's in danger in some
way. Oh, that
some
her way. Son is about
yes,
to be killed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But and even at the end, when old Joe is clearly trying to kill Sid, Sarah doesn't even attack. And this is a big part of it. Sarah doesn't attack old Joe at all. Doesn't try and stop, just tries to get in the way. Just tries to stop it in a nonviolent way, in a totally pacifist way. And I think that's a key to the movie. And this movie is very pro-motherhood. And
yeah, even just in the closing images of his hair being rubbed, which yeah, he talks exactly. about being like his mother used to do.
Yeah, and that's, I don't know, I like the character of Sarah a lot because of that. And just sort of, and she really ties into the drug addiction aspect of the movie, which isn't really talked about all that much, and is sort of glazed over a bit.
Yeah.
But it, again, that's another loop. And the idea this movie has with drug addiction is that it's another loop. It's a never ending cycle.
Yeah.
But the idea with this, you don't sort of, since it's addiction, it's a disease, you need help to get out of that one. And we see that with old Joe, has help getting out of his addiction
from his wife.
Yeah, yeah. As does young Joe from Sarah. Now, I mean, we can argue about, how big the problems or how quickly, young Joe gets over his addiction is, but I mean, we don't even know what drugs he's doing. So yeah. It's totally plausible that, you know, this is sort of a thing that
a day can, of withdrawal. And then, yeah,
it, you know, it seems unlikely, and just, the drugs that we know, that's not really the case.
Yeah.
But no, and I think I like what this movie says about addiction. And the thing that helped Sarah get out of her city addiction was Sid. It's
yeah.
sort of, it's a, again, a different type of thing, but still a loop that she had an assist to get out of.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, and one thing I want to talk about, and it reminded me when you were talking about old Joe's wife, and it was something I really hoped that they would explore more, and it really seemed like they're going to at the start, is how you spend those 30 years, mm-hmm. if you know you have 30 years left. And when they started doing that year one, year three, and showing him traveling the world and things like that, I thought that was really interesting. I thought they were going to explore that a lot more. And we kind of see it come up in bits and pieces near the end, but kind of this idea of old Joe getting married and falling in love and spending time with someone, knowing that it's all going to come to a very abrupt end.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that was a very interesting moral question about, do you grow attached to anybody in that time? How loving is it to build this relationship with someone only to be only to know that you're going to be taken away very quickly? Like, how fair is that to them? And I just thought a lot of that morality was going to come into play about the relationships that you develop in those 30 years that, you know, I mean, you do have a timeline, but it's very much out of your control.
Yeah. And I think there is a line in the movie where old Joe says something along the lines of, you know, I lived so long, I sort of thought that I was sort of free. There's something, I mean, I'm totally butchering the line, but there is a line in the movie where he says he feels like he was free and that he was going to be safe. So, I mean, that, and he doesn't meet her until year 25, I think.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that could be part of that. But yeah, no, I agree. The morals of that are interesting as well. But yeah.
Yeah, they didn't focus on that too much. And then it gets very Sid heavy near the end. And I really liked Sid before I found out he was evil.
Okay.
I thought that actor was really awesome.
Oh, the actor was very good. Yeah. Yeah.
And Karen Dillahunt.
I know. Yeah, no, that was another reason why this movie is a Western. Because Garrett Dillahunt appears. So.
Like all Westerns.
Yeah. Sometimes playing two roles.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he didn't do much, but I was still happy to see him.
Yeah. It's always a good thing to have a little Garrett Dillahunt in your movie.
Of course. Yeah. Jeff Daniels?
Yeah.
Why is he there?
Why not?
I don't know. I like him. He just seemed really out of place. Maybe just because I haven't seen him anything in a long time.
Yeah. I'm from the future. You should go to China. Okay. That's the funniest line in the movie, and that's why he's there.
That was very funny, and I love that as a time travel joke.
I saw this movie 2 times, and that killed both times.
Really? It didn't get any laughs where I was. I laughed way louder than anybody and felt like an idiot. But no, I thought that was so funny. I'm from the future. This should end all arguments ever.
Yeah, I love that.
Good stuff.
Yeah. No, and I was sort of... I guess the one thing we haven't sort of talked about in this movie, and it's never really, there's no real explicit philosophical discussion between old and young Joe. There kind of is, but not a big one about how, and I guess that's kind of one of the good things about the movie is that they don't make it too explicit, how young and old Joe, how their opinions on things just totally differ because they're the same person, but 30 years of life, additional life has been lived by old Joe. And you mentioned that he's often, you know, like talking shit to his younger self, like, come on, you idiot. Yeah. Like, don't do that.
I love it.
And I thought that's another really interesting aspect of the movie, but it's not totally explored. And I don't think that's to a fault of the movie, because I don't think it really, other than whether or not you should kill a kid, I think that's the only thing that really has any sort of hold over the actual movie, you know, like where those characters feel on that. But I think that is the key difference between me liking this movie and finding it really, really interesting and hoping it's a movie that everybody sees.
You can talk about.
And that this sweeps the Oscars. No, I just think this is the type of movie I want everybody to see.
Yeah.
Even though I didn't like it a lot. And I think a big part of that is that two of the themes that this movie looks at, or I guess the one theme is sort of time and how you change over time. And that's just something I think about constantly.
Yeah.
Like, the movie added sort of nothing for me in that discussion, because that's something I think about all the time. Like, it doesn't even take me 5 days before I'm like, well, if I could go back, I would try something else. You know what I mean? And I think that is the superpower I want to have, to be able to go back and do things again. And just
why you like Groundhog Day and all those kinds of things.
It's why I like time loop movies, because, like, even if I don't feel like I chose the wrong thing, I would always be super interested to see how a different choice would affect my life entirely. Like, I think about little things like working at a specific job a year longer than I could have, you know what I mean? Like, how that would have changed every step of my life.
Yeah.
And I think that's the most interesting thing to think about in human existence. Like, that would be the superpower I would want to have. When I have, like, I often ask people, like, would you want to go back to, like, with the brain you have now, would you want to go back to being an 8-year-old and just relive your entire life up to now? Would you want to do that? And my answer is always yes. Yeah. Absolutely, unequivocally,
I think most people's is.
See, I don't know. I get it. Like, it's sort of 50-50, and it always surprises me, because I feel like the argument is that people – and this is something I remember our friend Emma actually specifically saying to me, is that She's like, yeah, I feel like by age 9, you would be bored. Like, you're just so smart that you're sort of trapped in this, the social world of a 9-year-old. Like, yeah, you can only escape that so much. Yeah. And, you know, if you're reading Manufacturing Consent in the corner where you're supposed to watch Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego or Yo Gabba Gabba or whatever, you know, then it's just sort of like, okay, there's something's up here.
Yeah, and then you gamble and then you're rich and then you do.
Yeah,
you
see, that's not the interesting aspect.
No, I know.
Like, I would, again, want to live the same type of life that I've been living, yeah, but just get to relive these specific situations again. But again, like, that, it breaks the line if the first thing I do that's differently, that's the only action I really get to do. Yeah. And then everything, I'm just not doing
the same thing. It's not the same thing, yeah.
And yeah, that's sort of something I love thinking about. And that's sort of probably what I would have spent the most of my time thinking about from this movie, because it's the only thing that I don't think is really spelled out,
yeah,
in the movie. And I normally say spelled out as a pejorative as far as it goes with film. But I think the ending of this movie is wrapped up really succinctly in a way that I like. Like, it's a very, very anti-violence film that it happens to be very violent. And the reason it is so violent is to make these things seem stark. Like, there were people gasping in my audience when people would get shot.
Yeah.
And when this kid got shot in the face, people lost their shit.
Yeah.
And it, like, there's a defined purpose for that. And it's that so that the point of the movie hits home more.
Yeah.
And I like that a lot. You know, shoot a kid in the face if it proves a good point.
Yeah. Well, because there's that scene when Bruce Willis kills the first child and they show his gun. I'm like, they're not going to you don't show kids getting shot in movies. Like, they're going to cut away. And then sure enough, they do. And then he doesn't kill that second kid, which I think is a cool moral question. But yeah, I just didn't expect that Sid to get shot, especially in the face, especially in slow-mo.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that's sort
and
of...
yes, there is a function to it.
Exactly. I've seen kids die in action movies before. The first time I remember actually seeing it happen was in a Bruce Willis movie, that 2005 movie, Hostage. They kill a kid in the first, like, 5 minutes of that movie. But yeah, and... yeah, I've never seen, like, violence actually committed to a child in a Hollywood movie, even though this was financed independently and just sort of distributed by a studio.
Yeah.
But still, ballsy. but no, and I think, I don't know, I feel like that is probably the thing that is missing from this movie, is that the things that I like a lot are great, but it's so kind of expertly crafted. Like, I think the fault of this movie is that everything sort of works for me and works in a way that sort of leaves no questions for me, or at least not questions I'm interested in the answers to. Like, how does this time travel work? Like, I'm only interested in that to prove the point, and the movie proves the point so well that I don't need to be interested in it. And the thing that I think I could ask all these questions about that it doesn't do that with is, you know, how would your older self react to your younger self? And that's, again, how I, you know, like, you don't have to, anything we read on the website, I often say my younger self doesn't, you know, if I went back to my younger self, he would be an idiot.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't know. I think that is probably why I don't love this movie. But that doesn't make the movie any less good. I feel like objectively, this is a solid 8.5 out of 10.
Yeah.
And
but your enjoyment's just a bit less than that.
Exactly. Yeah. And again, like, I was trying to explain this as I saw it with a group earlier today and trying to explain it because everybody I saw it with really liked it. Trying to explain why I didn't love it. And I think it was just that every aspect of this movie is really good, except for the part where nobody screwed anything up and let me fill in the blanks. You know what I mean? that's the
which
best.
Is not a fair criticism.
Exactly.
But yeah.
Like, that's the best kind of error to make to me, but not like the worst kind of error to make in general is to leave holes. And well done, film. I just, you know, you should have fucked up more, Ryan.
Well, one thing that's cool with the, just to go back to the time loop thing, it's a super interesting thing to think about. And there are movies like Groundhog Day and Sliding Doors and a bunch that do the, you know, change one thing, see how it differs. And, but one thing I liked in this one is, as I said, in the diner scene where, you know, old and young Joe are talking, and it's kind of like that experience of doing things twice, but now someone's 30 years later and has to reflect on it. And I've only saw it once, so it's going to be paraphrasing it, but old Joe tries to give young Joe advice about his life, and he says, my life. And he's like, fuck you, it's my life. And
it's now or never. I ain't going to live forever.
But no, it's an interesting question. Like, who do these experiences belong to? Who are you, you know, responsible for explaining yourself to? Is it who you are now yet to go through these things, or the person who has gone through these things?
Yep.
Like, it's just a very interesting question of ownership of one's life when you're dealing with yourself 30 years later. And there's a ton of things I like about that diner scene, but that question, as far as something to think about, I think is one of the most interesting ones.
Oh yeah, I could have dealt with like 4 hours of diner scene. You know what I mean? Like,
oh yeah.
You know, I would run to see Looper 2, My Dinner with Joe and Joe. You know,
like, oh, and when the steak and eggs come and they're the same order. Yeah, it's like, of course they are, but I love that.
No, there are tons of little things like that. It's like, I've already ordered something and he's like, oh, I have steak and eggs. She's like, 2 steak and eggs.
Rare and scrambled.
Yeah. There are so many little cool things in this movie that I like a lot. Like even that one sort of throwaway line that young Joe says where he's like, your face looks backwards, which is awesome because you only ever see your face in a mirror, which reverses the image. And I think that's so cool.
That was cool.
Like that one line is awesome to me. And if I wrote this movie and sort of thought of that line, I would like, I don't know. What do you do the worm on my living room floor? Because I'm just so excited about that line.
I like the intro scene too. Just him conjugating French verbs and then showing up. And just to go back to the violence being jarring, as you said, as kind of like as a function of to send kind of an anti-violent message.
Yeah.
Just the people appearing and shooting them right away. Like it's just so cold.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be, and it has a function and everything, but.
It's like two beats, appear, shot.
Yeah, and you just see it over and over, and that it just drives home. Like, obviously, every time you're dealing with a hitman in a movie, it's supposed to be, oh, he's so cold and ruthless. But this one, it's just, don't know who it is, don't know what they've done, know nothing about them, and you just shoot them in the chest.
Yeah.
I like this.
Yeah, no, very good. And tons of little things in this movie. Like, I've seen it twice. I'll see it a couple more times for sure. And stylistically, it's off the charts.
There's some good the drug scenes and all the we talked about the montages, but a lot of the spinning cameras and stuff.
During the drug montage, I was like, I want Ryan Johnson to make Requiem for a Dream. I want that movie to be remade. And I'll keep the same script. I don't care what you're doing with the words. Just go nuts.
Just make it look pretty.
So where do you think this fits in with his other films for you?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think Brick and Brothers Bloom have that much in common thematically.
No.
I think they're both interesting, but thematically and visually, I mean, I don't think he's much of an auteur in the sense that you see his style right away when you start watching a movie. You know, the way that some auteurs, and I know we've discussed the differing meanings, but sometimes you see a movie and you'll know within a few minutes of who directed it. And I don't think he has that going for him. I do think it fits in a strain of visually interesting, not extremely predictable, and high quality movies. But that's as much as I can say for it being Johnson-esque.
Okay, I disagree with you as far as the visual style. I think he's got a very... very Ryan Johnson-y. I don't think there is a movie I've seen that looks like Looper, structurally or visually.
Yeah?
And
what's so unique visually?
Just his quick, like that shot that we talked about with where he traps Kid Blue in the...
Yeah.
Nobody dollies forward and then dollies back. And that's something that is in Brick as well and in Brothers Bloom. And I mean, again, like maybe this is just sort of points to... the different way we watch films. But I also think there's sort of in a writery sense, I feel in a writery sense, as a writer,
I'm fine with it.
Yeah. As a writer, I feel like Ryan Johnson's scripts have a lot of similar threads to them. Like you can get these really stark moments with his sense of humor sort of thrown in. And I feel like his sense of humor is really, really different. And I don't, it's not entirely, like, I don't mean it's a totally unique sense of humor, but I feel like particularly for Brick and Looper, I think the jokes in these movies exist only in these movies.
Yeah. They're dark, funny jokes. He's funny as fuck. Even when dealing with dark, heavy
stuff.
Oh
no. I think he's super funny. He's a really funny writer, but, and I think Brothers Bloom is lightheartedly hilarious, but, I think he's got a really defined style and I really love it. And I think it makes it even better because none of his movies look alike. Like they're all very stylized movies. Like, it's weird that Brick is probably the least stylized movie he's made, but they're all very stylized in a similar way, like kind of these alternate realities, or sorry, hyper realities, I guess. Yeah. They're not totally different from our world, but they're different from our world.
Yeah.
And again, I think I brought this up in our discussion of him as an auteur. That's sort of how he feels about film and digital, about how The Hobbit early test screenings or test previews or whatever have sort of been like, it's like cutting out the back of the wall of the theater and just looking into reality. And Rian Johnson's sort of stance on that is that, like, maybe that's not the best way to watch a film,
right?
And that we want some sort of removal. And I think what he's gotten across in all of his movies has still been really potent, even though they haven't been realistic films.
Yeah.
And I like that about Looper. And again, like, it sounds like this is my favorite movie of all time, and
no,
I really like it. And you know, I feel like there's a good chance, like, a year from now, I'll watch it, Looper, again and be like, what the hell? What was wrong with you, past self? You're ludicrous. Let's go have some steak and eggs and talk about this. I could beat the crap out of you and call you kid. But yeah, no, solid movie.
Throw gold at you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, by then I will amass tons of gold.
That was one shot I did not like in this movie.
Which one? Where he throws the gold? Like, close-up or the wide angle?
The wide one, it just looked poorly choreographed. Like, he waits for that punch for a little too long.
The wide's funny, though.
Sorry, it's not the shot I don't like, it's the execution of it. I liked how they did that again and how you got that view from outside of it instead of just as young Joe, but just something about the fight choreography was a little delayed and it looked goofy.
That's fair. I'm fine with that. Okay. I can totally see that point.
Yeah.
But I just sort of meant my initial question, and I'm happy we talked about what we just talked about for a moment.
Yeah.
But my initial question was, rank Rian Johnson's movies. And you can throw in the Breaking Bad episodes if you want.
I'm not going to do that. Okay. It's probably this, Brick, and Brothers Bloom.
Okay.
But I'd want to watch Brothers Bloom again, because I did enjoy that. And it's not that I didn't like that movie, because I did. But I'd have to see that and Looper again to assess it, because I've seen Brick a bunch, and I think I know how I feel about that forever.
Yeah.
No future self will change that.
Okay. Sure.
But yeah, it's probably that order, but I would not be surprised if this and Brothers Bloom maybe switched around, but I feel like Brick's going to be number one.
Okay. That's fair.
And you, sir?
Brothers Bloom is still my favorite. I think you could go either way on Looper and Brick. I feel like if you put a copy of Looper and a copy of Brick in front of me, or sorry, like if we're at a movie theater that's somehow miraculously showing Brick and Looper,
yeah,
and they both start at the same time, and you're like, here's money for one ticket, which one do you go see? It's a total toss up for what I would like tonight, what I would see.
Yeah.
I feel like in the long run, Looper might be better than Brick to me, but I could go either way for me. Brothers Bloom, totally the top. So.
I feel like you should open a movie theater with this premise.
We've talked about it because the Toronto, hypothetical movie theater. We have two movies, same time. Here's the money for one ticket. Go. And then it's just so easy for everybody.
Yeah. It's a great theater where they give you money
for a ticket. No, you know what that is? Well, yeah, exactly. Okay, but with taking away the giving away the money for the ticket, but although giving them money for the ticket, you just give them the ticket.
Walk out and come back.
Taking away the giving the money to the customer part, you know what movie theater we just described?
All of them.
All of the movie theaters. Yeah. So now that we have crossed all kinds of realities...
How movie theaters work by exchanging cash for goods and services.
Exactly. I think we might as well wrap this up. Thank you for listening to MacGuffin Men. Again, be sure to check out our website, themacguffinmen.com. We have all kinds of versions of our past and former selves written up on the site. James was pointing at his face and his book, so I feel like I should mention our Facebook page, facebook.com/themacguffinmen. Follow us on Twitter at themacguffinmen. James is having another dance party. Subscribe to us on iTunes, and please do rate us on iTunes. If you are still here, you probably liked what you were listening to. So if you could give us a rating on iTunes, that would be great. It would help increase our visibility, and maybe new people would be able to find us. Share our content on your Facebook page, your Twitter feed, whatever. We'd really appreciate it.
Big ass joke.
Yeah. thank you. We've got our Pinterest down mentioned down. So yeah, be sure to check back next week. I don't know what we're talking about yet, but it will be something, and perhaps you will love it. Thanks for listening. James is waving.
Thanks for listening to The MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check out our website, themacguffinmen.com, or follow us on Twitter @themacguffinmen.